Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you pass it live between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got author Tom Corner. He's the author of a couple of books, Borrowed Eyes and Feet, which is a book about overcoming a lifetime of doubt, anger, rage, and self-destruction. In a whole year of enlightenment, and he also has the book, Mommy, Why Do You Have Two Birthdays? And if you want the answer to that question, you can go to borrowedeyesandfeet.com and get yourself the answer to that question. This is a good conversation, and before we get into it, I just want to take a couple of minutes up top to draw attention to the fact that this is episode number 99, and episode 100 is next week. That's not counting the specials, mind you. The music special, the Halloween special, the Thanksgiving special. It's not counting any of those. And I could not be more proud of this thing. And speaking of things that I'm proud of, since I'm plugging things right up at the top of this, do me a favor and go to shark.hearnow.com. That's right. I just put out an album of music. It's a live album that I did with my friend Char Molina, a very, very talented vocalist, and me, a middling musician. And what we did was we played a gig at a burrito joint in Denver in February, kind of to test out some new material and dust off some old material and just sort of kick the tires and see if there was something worth exploring there. The kind of show that you would take for granted when we could go outside. And there's something wonderful in the energy of it. And I thought it would be good to put it out in the world. So, it's all original music. If you go to shark.hearnow.com, you can check that out. If you have a music service where you listen to stuff for free, it's there. And there are links on that website to where you can find it. If you listen on Spotify or Pandora or Apple Music or any of those things, Amazon, it's available. Just go find it. The name of the album is When We Could Go Outside, and the artist name is Shark, with an exclamation point. And don't forget to visit borrowedeyesandfeet.com to check out Tom Corner and what he's got going on. But without further ado, let's just get into this meaty conversation with Tom Corner.
Get some songs smashed out. But,
is that your podcast song?
Yeah.
YouTube video. Is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
That's awesome. I was watching it today. That's cool.
Nice. Well, let's jump in. Let's just
do it.
Dive right in head first. First things right. First. Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. Life is good.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, actually, because anyone who looks up your videos or has heard you on other podcasts knows that right now it seems like you've got a bit of a superpower, and that is a level of calmness about everything that is going on right now. The world is kind of deciding that for whatever reason, through be it the irritation of having to stay in or staying disconnected from people or the political unrest, the social unrest, all of those things, even justified or not, it's just chaotic in a lot of places. And then you're calm. So how does a person do that?
Well, thank you very much. I think we could just end it there. That's good. I'm just kidding. So, you know, I'm the proverbial duck on the water.
Yeah.
Like a fox or a dog on the edge. Looks totally calm, but underneath, the feet are moving.
Yeah.
And thanks for that observation. And I will agree with you. You're right. And not out of an arrogance, but out of an awareness. And that's, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the hell this is all about.
Yeah.
And I wrote my memoir, Barred Eyes and Feet, Find the Enlightenment After Rage, which is the acronym is FEAR.
Yeah.
And because I still do, but I carried a lot of anger throughout my life. And it's not a bad thing, but I believe we're led to believe that it's a bad thing and we're judged if we're angry.
Yeah.
And I realized that anger is just an expression. And if you're taught to understand it and accept it and learn from it and become better, it's a teacher. And it took me decades to figure this out. And right now, I could go in many different directions here, Chris, but right now with what's going on in the world, I see it from two sides. I see it from the human side and the ego side, and then I see it from another side, which is you could call it, I'll say it, and most people might tune out. I'll say the G word. You could call it God. You could call it Chi. You could call it Prana.
Mm-hmm.
I call it love, because, you know, listening to you and what you talk about and reading your blogs, and I feel similar feelings that you feel. And my question is, well, why haven't you? And this is where I've been able to face my fears. Well, why haven't I done it? Why haven't you done it? I believe that love is what keeps us in harmony with everyone. But
yeah.
When the ego gets involved, ego feeds off of fear, and it's scary, and we get sucked in by fear, because fear is death, fear is anger, fear is hatred, fear is judgment. And it's so easy to do all those things. And it's really, really hard, and I talk about this in my memoir, to turn around, do a complete 180 and turn around and face your fears. Because if you face your fears, the worst thing that could happen is you die.
Yeah.
And then you say, what happens if I die? Well, nothing. Everything's over and I have a release. I mentally kill myself more than you would like to think. And that's how I opened my book. I meditated on a suicide, because I believe it's like, I just need to release myself from my suffering. And people have these suicidal ideations, or maybe they do it because they believe it'll be a release.
Yes.
But the question is, what keeps us from doing it? And I believe that there's this, again, the energy of life, chi, prana, love, God, whatever you want to call it. I really believe that keeps you doing what you're doing and doing your podcast and being open and vulnerable like I am with my book, to say, look, I used to cut myself and burn myself with cigarettes, and I carried it in shame. And when you feel alone like that, it sucks. But
yeah.
Then you find that people feel the same way. You're like, holy wow, okay. That doesn't mean it's okay and I want to do it, but oh, maybe I could learn from somebody who feels the same way as I do. But then you don't want to get caught in the victim mindset or to carry that past with you, because you can't change, I believe, if you believe you're a victim. And I, in many ways, I think I felt that, and I carried my past, and that prevented me from being present in the moment. I missed a lot of my life because I was so worried about my past, and I was worried about what was going to happen in the future, and I missed everything right there in front of me.
That is an excellent, excellent point. And it's one that, frankly, I actually don't hear all that often, is talking about the way that actively carrying around the baggage of the past and reliving those moments of the past sort of keeps you in a state of suspended animation. It's an arrested development of your soul, just carrying around all of your everything that you've ever done wrong or perceive yourself to have done wrong, rather than kind of work through it, just kind of accepting that as a cocoon of your reality and just kind of wearing that around without moving forward. It's a tough spot to be in when you're in the middle of it, because it just seems like reality at the moment. The reality is, I am the things that I did. You know what I mean?
I absolutely agree with you, but that is not the reality of life.
Right.
We
of course
believe
not.
It's, yes, we believe it's reality. And to my point earlier, is if I'm not taught, and I've before this book, I wrote 3 children's books and then a memoir about my wife's triumph over stage 4 cancer. And my books are about just, okay, well, what's this stupid thing called happiness? Because I don't believe it. And I spent years trying to learn about it. And it's real. It's true.
Yeah.
But you said a word, perspective. And so, pain is a wrong perspective. So if we feel that we're in pain, it's just our perspective's wrong. And the thing is, if you're angry and you're in pain, and you said, bullshit, I don't believe you, show me. And,
yeah.
I still do that. And I'm going down a spiritual path trying to say, well, show me there's another way. And there is, because like you mentioned in your blogs and your comments, like, okay, I wake up every day. What am I going to do? Have a cup of coffee or commit suicide?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Am I going to give up or am I going to forge forward? Everybody has that type of thought every day. We just label it.
Yeah.
And if it's very extreme that you're talking about, and like I talk about in my book, it's a matter of, well, my wife would always say, what's wrong with you? Like, not what's wrong with you, but like, stop making a big deal out of it. There's nothing wrong with you. You're perfectly fine. And I'm like, yo, there's something wrong with me. I have to figure it out.
Yeah.
She's like, there's nothing wrong with you. And she balances me out. And she's right. There isn't. But my perspective is flawed. And if you're not, I believe we are not taught that as kids. And that's why I started writing children's books, because if I'm taught that, you know, kids were brought up that they were supposed to be seen, not heard, which is awful.
Yeah.
In different generations. And I want my kids to speak up. I want them to be vocal, not in a mean way, but to express themselves and understand, okay, if you express yourself, well, why do you feel that way? Because when I get impatient with my kids they'll become upset. My 11-year-old, I said, Jordan, listen, if I get upset with you, it's not at you. I'm upset with my perspective of the situation because my mind is playing out what I think will happen. And then I become ornery and I become upset. And then you happen to be there. And then I get upset with you. It's not you. It's me. And I'm trying to share this awareness with you so that you can carry that, because the only reason we feel certain ways is because of our understanding of the situation. Mm-hmm. And it's our past learning. So if I'm taught that if I'm heard, I'm bad. If I'm angry, I'm not supposed to be angry. What's wrong with you? Versus, okay, be angry. I'm totally fine with that. But acknowledge it, accept it, and try to understand what makes you angry. And it's usually some illusion in our mind of something that our past that allows us to become angry. And instead of saying you're bad and you're stupid and feeling guilty and never figuring it out, you can say, oh, okay, I'm angry. It all boils down to our past. And if we woke up tomorrow with absolutely no recollection of our past, think about how everybody would be at peace, because they can't judge. There's no history. There's no hatred. This is fascinating. But I spent years doing this, and I've gone into dark places, and it's scary because you're trying to figure out what's it all about, and why does everybody else seem happy or successful and I'm not? It's just a flawed perspective.
You know what's interesting about that perspective too, is that there is kind of something that I've begun to notice, and I think I've heard it phrased different ways, but the way that really started to make sense to me was people would rather be special than happy. And there is something to it when you can be, you know what, I have all of these problems, and these problems and the things that I'm burdened with are what make me special. And I'm going to hang on to that, because if I let go of that, I'm just like everyone else.
you're right. So would you rather be right or at peace? That's from A Course in Miracles.
Yes, yes.
And so I became immersed in A Course in Miracles. That's the spiritual side. And it's a big book. I've read it a few times. I still read it because I learned something new, but I still get so upset reading it because I'm thinking, this is how, I still haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I see it more and more every day. I'm clearer than I was before. And I've shared with other people, I enrolled in what Zig Ziglar used to call Automobile University, because when I was traveling a lot, I would listen to Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn, Dr. Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, all these people. And I remember going into a meeting, I parked my car, turned off Wayne Dyer, and I was just pissed off. I'm like, this is all BS, don't work.
Yeah.
And he's talking about happiness and all this stuff, and I'm like, that's garbage, because my perspective was wrong and I wasn't ready to receive it, Chris. So if my perspective is wrong and I'm not aligned and I'm not ready to receive that, it's not going to penetrate, because I put up this wall of anger for years.
Yeah.
And again, I just got tired of it because I decided I can't live a life like this. A life of anger is not a life worth living. And I had two choices. I'm going to end it. There's only two ways to do it. I could end it physically, or I could do the really, really difficult thing. I'm not sure which is more difficult, but to face my fears.
Yeah.
And I still do it every day, but it's so enlightening, because we create so many illusions in our mind. And if we're able to be in the moment and we're able to process what's happening in our world, it's all because of our thoughts. Whatever we think actually happens.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's fascinating. It's scary. But it's, a lot of people need to do that, because I learned in my book, I talk about, I think you mentioned this in one of your recordings. I don't talk about my book that much unless I'm on an interview, because that's in the past. That's no longer me.
Yeah.
And I faced it and I wrote about it and I'm like, that's not me anymore.
But
you know, Ram Dass said, you know, if you feel you're enlightened, spend a week with your family. Then your family comes around and they remind everything about you in the past. And then you become angry again. But where was I going with that? So I wrote my book about my past, and I had a life coach. So here's another thing. I've went down a spiritual path. I had a lot of life guides and coaches, and Wayne Dyer and Louise Hay and all these people, Jim Rohn. Then I met a life coach who I would talk to constantly to figure out, and she would hold the focus for me. She wouldn't judge me. That's a big deal. She wouldn't label me. She wouldn't judge me. She doesn't label me. She doesn't judge me. And she just hears me out. And I would become so upset, and I would yell at her on the phone, Chris. And I would be so angry. And she would sit there. And she said, "Tom, I never said that." And I said that, and I would become, I would yell at her. I said, "She's like, I never said that." And it was my perspective and me choosing what I wanted to hear, because it was from a place of anger. Now, if you shift that perspective and you're able to stop time and say, "Is this really true? Okay, is it really true? Yes or no?" Usually it's not. If it is, what's the worst thing that can happen if this is really true? Well, I'll be made fun of. I'll be embarrassed. The worst thing that can happen is I die. It's morbid, but the worst thing that can happen is I die. And when I die, what happens? None of this shit matters. It's gone. So why would I, when going through that process helped me? Because it's kind of a letting go. Like, okay, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean I don't care. It means it doesn't matter. And I can find peace and solace and happiness in that moment. But I do those things dozens of times a day. You know, hundreds of times a week, because you come across situations where someone says something. And right now, everybody's on heightened awareness and are upset with one another because of what's going on in the world.
Sure. I mean, I'm as guilty as of that as anybody. I've come to a place where I feel like I've recognized a lot of those things, and I try to let my empathy come first. And recognize that I don't have all the answers or where a person is coming from. And yet, I still have these moments where someone will say or do something that is contrary to how I believe, and my reaction is to just jerk that knee straight up.
Right? Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it really is.
It's true.
But that's the funny thing about that, is that it can be kind of a difficult place to come to, where you recognize where are the places that I'm going to allow myself to feel this self-righteousness and this anger? How am I going to allow myself to express it? Because it is almost about a level of allowance, coming to recognize, is this useful to me? And is this harmful to anyone else? What is the harm to feeling better quotient? What's the math on that? And it usually, honestly, doesn't work that far up. So what I usually will do these days, most of the time, if I'm really upset about something, I'll say something about it out loud, but I don't really get into it on the the social areas of the internet, because the internet it's very useful. It's kind of a great invention, because all of the information you've ever wanted or didn't know you wanted is right at your fingertips. Great learning tool, great way to stay in touch. It's been a great journalistic tool in some ways. We know what's happening in other countries before the news even gets a hold of it.
Right.
But because everyone now has a voice, there's sometimes some digging that has to be done to validate certain things. We're dealing with a lot more sources, so vetting isn't necessarily easy to do. So it's kind of a back and forth. It's in its infancy. And as we find ourselves getting more and more, let's say, just sort of polarized by each other, whether it be, you know, politics or sports or whatever it happens to be, there's definitely an element of being able to feel disconnected while connected.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. But with you in particular, with everything that you've gone through, finding that place of discovering that the key to managing your anger properly is love, that had to have been a difficult transition. Those two things seem to be rather at odds with each other on the surface because we use them as antonyms, but really they seem to be pretty interconnected, don't you think?
Yeah. And actually, you know, it's funny, if I were listening to this and you just said went from anger to love years ago, I would say that's just, like I said, that's a bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
There's no way. There's no way, man. That's BS.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I've spent, again, a ton of time, you know, meditating, reading A Course in Miracles, studying Buddhism, really trying to understand, you know, spirituality from different angles and lenses. And from Buddhism, it's suffering. So anger is suffering. And I participated in Eckhart Tolle's School of Awakening a couple years ago, and it was amazing. And still there were times where I'm like, this is, again, I'm still breaking through. I'm not yet there accepting it because I have this ego that's holding on saying, no, it's all BS. It's all a lie. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for that love, because yeah, love is all mushy and love is weak. That's what's crazy, because love is weak in most people's eyes. If I were to say to you, Chris, and walk up to you, and people say, you're weird, you are strange, I love you and give you a hug.
Yeah.
Before this year, like in normal situations.
Right.
you would be like, dude, get away from me. And here's the thing. I heard this, somebody else talk about this, but I wrote about this in Mommy, Why Do You Have Two Birthdays, about my wife and her triumph over stage 4 cancer, that we would hold a 30-second hug. Like, have you ever hugged someone for 30 seconds? Because it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you usually, if you hug someone, it's a hug, and then a second later you separate. But to hold someone and hug them,
yeah,
that's vulnerability, because now you're close, and then you feel yourself. And my wife would always do that, and I'd hold her, and she'd try to break away, and then I'd pull her in closer.
Yeah.
I could feel her getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I believe our society is, and maybe the world, I don't know, is brought up that, and it's in movies, it's everywhere. Anger, violence, we're led to believe that anger and violence is the solution. And I believe that, you know what, if we didn't glorify it or glorified suicide, it wouldn't be as rampant as it is.
Yeah.
Because if you're unaware of it, it's not going to happen. And we glorify the hell out of it, and we wonder why it's there. But if you're able to, you know, like write my book and say, okay, here I am. I still get like choked up talking about this. Like, I'm like, I feel I'm a failure.
Yeah.
And I feel I haven't done what I'm supposed to do. And I'm sorry. Like, it's me saying it to my parents. It's me saying it to my brothers and to my wife. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm trying to find a way, and I need your help. I just don't want to be judged. I don't want to be labeled. I don't want to carry the scars of my past, my physical scars and my mental scars. And the problem is, if you're, everybody has parents, and if you have kids, but a parent feels if you say that to a parent's job, they believe, is to rescue you as their child. And I remember having a conversation with my mother. I'm like, I don't need your help. I want you just to listen and to nod your head. I don't need you to rescue me. I don't need you to save me or judge what I'm doing. I just need you to sit there and listen to my bullshit.
Yeah.
And help me and help. And like my life coach does, hold the focus, but it's hard. And I find it with my kids. I'm always trying to rescue them. And I catch myself because I'm like, I'm doing to them what I don't want to happen for my parents to do to me. So it's really, okay, we're brought up a certain way. I realized that my parents divorced when I was about six. I carried that burden with me. And I believe that the other adult figureheads, my step-parents in my life who couldn't accept me, they shut out. I was a kid. I said, I need to be loved. I want to love you. I can't survive on my own when I'm six or seven. And then they shut me out. And so then I put up a wall and I said, okay, you guys suck at this. You suck at, expressing love. So I am going to push it away. And I put this barrier up for years to keep me safe. And that was my ego or subconscious saying, this is my protection mechanism. And it's flawed, but most people carry that and they don't see it. And they're like, it's not flawed. You're all wrong. You're all the jerks. I'm perfectly fine. Go screw yourself.
Yeah.
And that's, and I realized, I said, I can't do this anymore. And that's why I wrote my story. And I said, I'm not blaming anybody. I need to understand where it came from. And now if I understand my past and if I understand my step parents who couldn't accept me, and if I see their past and understand how they were brought up, that's the way they were raised. And now it makes sense. That's all they knew. They did their best. Everybody's doing their best. And then I realized I'm living up to the expectations of everyone else. I'm living up to the expectations of my teachers, of my bosses, of my parents, of my friends. And I'm destined for failure because eventually somebody's going to disappoint me, as Abraham Hicks says. So here's the thing, Chris, it's a matter of breaking through all that garbage and then as hard and then looking in the mirror. And I did mirror work, which Louise Hay talked about, and it sucks.
Oh yeah.
It's scary, but it's so powerful. But the deal is if anybody can find self-acceptance and find love, and they can forgive themselves and accept who they are, then there's no more war. There's no more attack, because I don't need to defend myself because I found that inner peace. That is so hard to do. But when you get a glimpse of it, Chris, you want more. You want more, because I find myself in days saying, forget it. I'm going back to anger. I'm going back to pushing people out because so many people are just mean.
Yeah.
I can't do that. That is my ego. I believe that's the easy way out. And that's my weakness. And it's most people's weakness. Our strength is being able to hug, which again, it makes me cringe, and to love someone. And especially now, people are so afraid, and fear can either be the worst thing in your life or it can be the greatest teacher. So back to your point about anger and love, I've learned that anger has been my greatest teacher. And somebody asked Eckhart Tolle, well, you keep talking about anger and suffering, but how do, and that we can just be at peace. But how, that doesn't make sense. How can someone just be at peace without suffering? And it's just our mindset. We choose that we need to suffer. To your point, I'm special.
Yeah.
And without my specialness, I mean, here's a scary thing. Without my ego, my specialness, who am I? Nobody. I'm nothing. Your ego says, without my anger and I put down my arms, and I tell you I love you and I give you a hug, I'm exposing my true strength, which is seen as a vulnerability because I open myself up to attack. And my ego says, without that, you're nothing.
Yeah.
But without that, I'm free, because if I open myself up and I'm willing to forgive myself and you or anybody else, that it paves the path towards enlightenment, peace. And then whenever my suffering comes up, or anger, I look at it as a teacher, and I brought that on myself. I believe that we are energetic beings, and whatever happens in my life is because of my thoughts. And where it's kind of where I'm what energy level I'm vibrating at. And if I'm ornery and angry, I'm going to bring that on. If I'm peaceful and loving, I'll bring that on. But here's the thing, I do it, but I still hold on to my defense.
Yeah.
And so if I go down the love path and someone says, not what I thought, my ego comes back in saying, told you so, it doesn't work. Like, we're, and humans are insane, quite frankly, the way our mind works. So,
but there is so much. There's so much fear in freedom. When you have that true freedom, when you make yourself free from fear, and fear is really the big one. But when you decide that you're going to explore things freely, like I also really resonated when you were talking about hugging people, because a few years ago, I was brought in to audition for this band, and I came in and I'm playing the drums and everything's working out great, and the next time I saw one of the guys at the next stage of tryouts to start rounding things out, I gave the guy a hug. And he was weirded out by it. Just weirded out by it. But to me, I thought, if we're going to do this thing together, then we've got to be, the situation will require us to be fearless with each other, or it's not going to work.
That's true. I mean, good God, especially in bands, right?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, I my whole experience before that was with people that there were times where I was in a band for about 10 years. We toured around. We had to live in vans and sleep on floors and, you know, all kinds of stuff, like just, you know, eating tuna fish and rice cakes. Yeah. Like, we had to go through all of these things together, you know, getting booed off stage and people being indifferent and believing in a cause and believing in each other, even when we did not like each other at all. And it matters a lot when you're going through something like that and you're in service of a cause, that you know that even if you're upset with each other, you know that there's that vulnerability, that are all in this together. And I know that because I'm standing not with my arms crossed, but with my arms wide open, ready for whatever is happening. And you know that I'm going to be straight with you. You know I'm going to be honest with you. And I know that you're willing to be honest with me, because if we can be vulnerable with each other, we can be honest with each other.
Yeah, that's a big step. It's scary for most people, but
it is scary. It's scary to do with just about any person.
The dynamic of a band fascinates me, because you're right. I mean, it's so true. And most people don't see it.
Yeah.
But there's such a, that's a whole nother level of experience with people who are not your family, but potentially become your family.
Yeah.
They might become your enemy, what you think, but you know, at the end of the day, they become family, but I love.
Well, and that really is amazing. That really is the case. I mean, it really was like a family. Because family is the only other group of people that you will love and hate being around at the same time. I can't think of any other group where you'd have that situation. You know, that that thing where people will say, well, you know, yeah, I know he's an asshole, but he's my brother.
Right.
You know? It's the same kind of thing when you're in a band with people. If it's going to be successful, if it's going to work out, then you've got to be willing to have that kind of openness, that willingness to share experiences and to be to be honest with people and to listen when somebody's having trouble. Because if somebody's having trouble, you're all having trouble. That's
and you're talking about, like, you know, anger and love. You're talking about suffering. It's,
yeah,
it's kind of a Buddhism experience, because I believe the way we create creativity is with pressure.
Yeah.
We procrastinate, we're under pressure, it gets our creative juices going. The dynamic in a band, I believe, creates such a great level of emotion, mm-hmm, that I believe that's, you know, some of the greatest music comes from that dynamic. And if you learn to get away from the suffering and struggle and still find that creative spark, that's a whole nother level. And you can say, I'm here and I'm not suffering or hating or being angry. I'm learning from this and I'm still able to write some amazing music. That's a fascinating dynamic to me.
That's been a tough experience. Process for me as a person, because I always thought, that all of my, again, that whole idea that we've been sold this whole time of the tortured artist. It's like, you know, if you take away my depression, I won't be able to write songs anymore.
Right.
I was genuinely worried about that. And I had to learn that, no, all of this is inside of me. I was using the depression as an excuse for not actually putting in the work. You know, it's like a person saying, I'm going to throw myself into an awful relationship because I know I'm going to get something out of it. That feeds this part of me. Putting yourself into awful situations that are familiar because they're familiar, and keeping those cycles going because you know how to manage those cycles, but you don't know how to manage happiness because you've never tried. And the unknown is fear. Fear of the unknown is huge. That's why people will choose to end their suffering through suicide or through drug addiction or through many other forms of finding yourself distracted versus actually pinpointing the thing that is the key to why you're unhappy and putting forth any kind of effort toward resolving that, because that's the hard part. And when there is something difficult to do, there are a series of unknowns in the outcomes, and that gets scary.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. And we do glorify labeling people so that we believe, like, to your point, that we are supposed to be this way. It's my identity and it's not. And I remember going to a counselor when I was cutting myself, because I knew all along, Chris, like, it's crazy that I was going to be okay. I don't know, again, whatever that energy was, like, all along, really bad in college, high school and college, I was doing some bad stuff. It's could be worse than one person's. It could be nothing compared to another's, but it was stupid stuff. But I always knew for something said, told me that I was going to be okay. But I remember sitting with my counselor or whatever, and I was cutting myself, and I knew I was doing that. I wasn't trying to kill myself, but it was my way to hide my mental pain. So I felt the physical pain, and I felt that, and it was my release. Yeah. I didn't know that at the time, but it was awesome because it felt so great. And then I saw the blood. I'm like, all right, I'm alive. I'm okay. It's crazy. It's insane to do it.
Yes.
And I cringe when I think about it. I'm holding my arm now as I think about it, because it was crazy. And my counselor had a heart attack. So his partner came in and sat down with me during a session. And this is what used to really upset me, is because people label, they don't want to understand. We're taught a certain way.
Yeah.
If we go to school, we're taught a certain way. It's not a bad thing, but we stay in that box and we don't open ourselves up to saying, well, why?
Yeah.
And I remember this gentleman say, well, if you do it one more time, we're going to put you away. And I'm like, you don't even know who I am. How can you even judge me by just opening up a folder
Yeah.
And sitting down and threatening me with that. And I'm like, I know I'm fine. And I just was blown away. And then here's the thing. When you're a youngster, you don't have a voice. Because if you act up, you're labeled. That's where I really feel concerned about people. If they want to say, look, yeah, I am. And if you act out in anger, that's because that's all I know. But people want to label it. And it's really challenging. And I remember being so frustrated because I said, I'm fine. I mean, yeah, it doesn't look fine for everybody looking in, but I know I'm going to be okay. You don't need to put me away. And he didn't, but it was just, it was interesting because I'm always looking maybe to challenge the status quo to find again, what's the reason for all this. And people look at this as I'm not disrespecting parents. I'm not disrespecting teachers. And like with my kids, I'm like, you are welcome to challenge me on anything I say. And sometimes I forget, and they're like, you told me to challenge you on that, Dad. I'm like, oh, you're right. Out of respect, out of knowledge, out of us becoming better as humans, to ask a question. Not be afraid because somebody has a degree or somebody's older than you. At the end of the day, we're all on the same level. If you boil it down to love, it doesn't see any differences.
Yeah.
And it's totally fascinating because I see it with my kids and their friends come over and they address me as Tom. And then I hear something saying, well, they should call me Mr. Corner.
Right.
And I'm like, well, where the heck does that come from? And
right.
one of their friends will say, hi, Mr. Corner. And I feel like, oh, that's right. That's my ego. Oh, Mr. Corner. I'm like, that's just the silliest thing
right.
I ever heard. They're just trying to connect. They just entered this life experience on this earth at a different time than I did.
Yeah.
That's why kids are great. And I say they're our greatest teacher because they come into this world with no judgment, with no fear. And they are love. They're pure love. And then as they grow, they have that love. And then eventually they are introduced to fear. They're introduced to hatred. They're introduced to judgment. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of carves their path. And sometimes if they don't know how to get off that path or to understand why they're on that path, it stinks.
Well, and it's so funny that the way that we can be harmful in the development of that love while we think we're being helpful. The way of saying, oh, you've got love in your heart. Well, don't show that to anybody. Because people are just going to take advantage of that and you're going to get hurt. And then, you know, you teach them to be afraid. You teach them not to love people. You teach them to hide those things and to be skeptical and wary and mistrustful. And you think, awesome, I've been helpful. You know, they're going to be safe. But the fact of the matter is it's just not true. It's harder to have a nuanced conversation that could be difficult in reckoning with your children as human beings. My youngest is going to be 18 in weeks.
Okay.
And I don't know how to manage 18. That.
Well, and that's the thing is right. Is you don't have to manage it.
Yes, exactly.
And to your point before, our fear, our anxiety is because when we let go, that means we're not in control and we're afraid of not being in control. And the dynamic of being a parent, my oldest is 13.
Yeah.
And she's doing what 13-year-olds do. Mm-hmm. And I have this experience of me being 13.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to her because I'm like, what she's doing at 13 is not what I did. Doesn't mean she's going to do that. And that's where it's really hard as a parent, because I ask myself, I'm like, well, if I let her go and I don't do anything, oh my God, something awful is going to happen. If something awful happens, I'm going to be judged. So we tell ourselves we can't do that. So we have to go in and then say, well, you know, based on my supreme knowledge, and I know everything, what you're doing is wrong. And so I catch myself and I get upset with her. And I say, listen, I just am basing this off of my experience. You're going to do what you're going to do. And I'm okay with that. I'm just trying to keep you safe. I'm trying to keep you as safe as long as possible. And some things I'm trying to prevent you from doing as long as possible. Eventually it's going to happen. But I want to make sure that you do the right things, because some things that if we make a decision, once we make that decision, we can't get it back.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with social media. Once you make that decision to send something, you can't get that back.
Yeah.
So be thoughtful for yourself, not for me. It's not that I don't care about you, but you're responsible for yourself. And you have to think about how you present yourself to others, but also do you accept and love yourself? Because that's really hard to do. And so being a parent is it's a really difficult dynamic because, yeah, I mean, geez, 18 years old.
Yeah.
That is, I'm not there yet. That's a whole nother level. And
yeah,
I was so
but to recognize that your children are not extensions of you.
Yes, and they're not our children.
Right. they're just people. And ultimately, it's kind of not about you. I mean, some of it is, unfortunately, and that's something that everybody has to own. It's like I've said it 1,000 times on this show, it's really not a matter of if you're going to fuck up your kids, it's how. So it's just a matter of, but that comes with the nature of being a teacher, especially if you're a teacher who isn't necessarily sure what they're teaching. You're going to make some mistakes. Yeah. And so kind of going backward and recognizing that you've made some errors in your life as a human being, you have options with how you're going to respond to that. You can't always do the right thing, but you can always recognize, at least after a certain point, this is what the situation is, regardless of whether or not I'm in it. Who am I going to be when this moment occurs? Who am I going to arrive as? And what version of myself am I going to give the control to? And it is almost like you're piloting around this electric bag of meat and it's making the decisions for you. And it's not. It's not making the decisions for you. You're making the decisions. And you really have a lot of power over those decisions, even if it doesn't feel that way. So taking a step back, breathing, and I love what you said earlier about taking the worst case scenario and letting it play out in your mind. I think that's a very, very valuable tool. It is so valuable to be able to think things through all the way to the end. And much like I've heard other times, people will say things like, you know, if you're feeling suicidal because your life has spiraled out of control or things are painful and things are hard, think things through. Like if the suffering is coming from these places, what would it look like for you to try to end the suffering right at the source? What would it look like for you to talk to that person who's been a problem? What would it look like to be honest with the person you've been lying to? All of those things. And who are you when those things are over? When it all comes down to it? Because again, if you're thinking about ending it all anyway, what's the harm in making some effort? Let's actually go do this thing that we're afraid of. Let's live the life we're afraid to live. Why not?
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen?
It's to your point about that's my identity. That's my specialness. I've been brought up to believe that this is me.
Yeah.
And they won't let go of it. Now here's the other part too. And it's really, really difficult because if your mind, I talk about the mosh pit of your mind in my book because you're in music. If you've ever been in a mosh pit.
Oh yeah.
I remember the first time going into a mosh pit with a friend, and he's like, hook arms with me. We're just going to run right through and just plow people over. And I was like, dude, this isn't, I don't know if I like this idea. But we ran through and nothing happened to us, but I'm like, this is crazy. And, you know, I've been in a number of concerts in a mosh pit. My perspective, again, Chris, of the world was anger, everybody's anger.
Yeah.
So I'm going to a mosh pit. My perspective of the mosh pit is fear and anger, and it's violent. And that was my perspective. And you look at them, sometimes you can't get out of it because it's just this pit and this wall of people. And if you try to get out, some people will push you back in. So think about your mind, because I realized, I'm like, okay, my mind's like a mosh pit. It processes 50, 60, 70,000 thoughts in one single day. And so if I'm suicidal, I mean, that's extreme.
Yeah.
Like in general, with people that have doubt that maybe it's overwhelming, that's one thing. If I'm suicidal and it's so dark and that my mosh pit is 70,000 thoughts of death and that's it, I'm screwed. And if I can't have someone to hold the focus for me, and this is what I started doing. And I kind of say, all right, I tried it. I tried to throw affirmations into my mosh pit. And for years I said it didn't work. And most people quit because they don't give it time. And I say, I love myself. And I can, every time I tell people, you say that, look in the mirror, say, I love myself. First of all, are you still looking at yourself? But secondly, if you are, or if you're not, then you obviously need to go back. But if you do it, or just say it without looking in the mirror, feel your body. I just said it to you, Chris. I still feel it where I have always done, in my chest and my shoulders. I feel tension.
Yeah.
That's your resistance. That's your ego, whatever it is, saying, yeah, you really don't love yourself. And so that mirror work is scary. It's, people don't do it because they think it's stupid.
Yeah.
And there were Saturday Night Live skits about it, joking about it, but that's real.
Yes.
So if my mosh pit, I throw in, I love you, I accept you, all those other thoughts about anger are just going to stomp on it. And my mosh pit continues to be angry and ornery. And then I try it again. It doesn't work. And I realized, okay, this is BS. This is the only thing I know. But it took me years. And I decided to write my children's books. And I tried to put myself out there. And then eventually I started reciting affirmations. And I remember saying this to Frank King. I'm like, I recite affirmations to myself 100 times a day, maybe thousands. He's like laughing. He's like 1,000 times a day. I'm like, well, Frank, the mind processes 70,000 thoughts.
Yeah.
And I need this deliberate practice of being nice to myself and saying, is this really true? What's the worst that can happen? I deeply love and appreciate myself. And it works, because I was a skeptic for the longest time. And so that mosh pit slowly becomes a game. When these thoughts come up and say, you suck, you're a failure, you're a loser, you should die. First of all, accept it, acknowledge it, say, okay. Then you go through your affirmations or you question it. Like you said, is it really true? No, I actually deeply love and appreciate myself. Or as Louise Hay says in Mirror Work, put in, I'm willing to love and appreciate myself.
Yes.
Right?
That's the stuff right there.
Because I didn't believe it. And then I said, I'm willing to. I'm like, oh, all right, this is good. Because I'm willing to do it. I'm not there yet, but I'm willing to try. So you just put that unwilling, changes the whole ballgame.
It absolutely does.
So that's like your mosh pit. And then here's the thing. I remember talking with a friend who read a blog article I posted called Hate Myself? Because I was doing the Eckhart Tolle School of Awakening. And I remember walking my dog in the nature preserve, and I am so, it's a beautiful spring day, sun shining, and I'm livid. And I'm like, I freaking hate this.
Yeah.
I hate myself. I'm tired of trying. And then I realized I can't hate myself. It's impossible to hate myself. It's impossible for you to hate yourself. What you hate is the illusion or the thoughts about what you've created about the world around you, the people in the world, and yourself.
Yes.
And I said, holy crap. I can't hate myself. It's just my flawed belief system that there's something wrong with me. I just hate the thoughts that I've created. And if I change that, oh my God, wow, my whole world changes. But most people don't get to that point. Like, again, if you're that suicidal, you need somebody to kind of guide you, not judge you or label you. Say, let me hold the focus for you.
Yeah.
Let me hold the focus for you. And get angry. Get angry. I don't care. Yell, punch the wall, whatever. Get angry. Because every time I would get angry at my life coach, then this piece would come over me. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not yelling at you. I'm just yelling at the situation because you did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And she got it. She was always like, I know, Tom. But I would find that I would come full circle. Most people can't come full circle.
Well, and coming to the conclusion that you are not your thoughts.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this has been just a real, just mind-bending conversation.
Totally.
I could talk to you all day, but I can't. So
we could bookmark it and do it again when my next book comes out, if you want.
Absolutely. I can't wait for it. Thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks for all you do.
Oh, thank you.
And your listeners can check me out at tomcorner.net if they'd like to. Please support my efforts. Buy a book. Share it with a friend. Share this awesome podcast with Chris. Coffee Over Suicide. Love it. Please share it. Send it to friends. Yeah, that's it, man. I love it.
And there you have it. Episode number 99. In the can. Out in the ether. And did you enjoy it? Did you have a good time? Because if you did, and you want to get some more Tom Corner in your life, and I know that you do, you're going to want to go to borrowedeyesandfeet.com. There are links to his other books and some other things that you can find. And you can also find him on Facebook, facebook.com/tomcorner.inspire. And that's all I got for you this week. Don't forget, go to shark.hearnow.com. And check out the music. I would really love to hear your thoughts on this. I agonized over whether I should put it out in the world, and ultimately I decided it's a thing that I made, and now it exists where once there was nothing. But until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.